was.
Oh, yeah. Malvina knew what it was. And I think Ray Cooper, my guest here tonight, knows what it's about. Hi, Ray.
Hope so. Thanks a lot for having me again.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And veganism, Veg Curious.
Yeah. Well, Veg Curious is the meeting in Petaluma for people that are interested in plant-based lifestyle, diet, just leaning or, you know, see a value in that. Just wanted to mention my mom's name was Malvina. I don't know if I mentioned that the last time.
Oh,
how many people
it.
Are named Malvina? You know, not that many, you know.
It's true.
But that's you've played her twice now.
Wow.
I think this is my third time now, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, I believe it is. So the time before was the time before I went on the trip, and now I've actually made it, which is amazing that I did make it. I wasn't... You know, I had to go out and do it, see if I could make it.
I know, as you may have heard if you were listening a bit earlier, Ray did an amazing trip. He walked all the way from the very uppermost of the toppermost of Scotland to the very leastermost of of England, down in Cornwall at Land's End. Wow, what a trek.
Yeah, end-to-end, as they call it. And I was calling it the granddaddy of all hikes when I would run into people because they'd be on the Staffordshire Way or the Worcestershire Way. There's Limestone Way, all these different ways, and they're about 100 miles, and there's a Pennine Way.
Yeah,
it's the longest one. It's 260. I did them all, strung them all together. And people,
Yoo-hoo!
Well, thank you. No, it's a 10 years or a decade, just to make it sound better, a decade's worth of long-distance hiking kind of culminated in that. And also, I brought together, you know, the trip was really all my values and things that I really love, like travel and animals and fitness, people and food. That's just a few things that I combined into this, you know, trip. And so it was a once in a lifetime thing, and you don't know if you're going to make it until you do it. So you know, I'm just very thankful that I made it the whole way, and wasn't a guarantee, of course.
Right. What inspired you to go to Britain and do that?
Well, that's a good question. I was in the Grand Canyon in 2012 as I was going along on these long-distance hikes, and there was a guy from Britain, from Norfolk, and we shared a campsite, and he challenged me to it. He said, you ought to do the... of course, it was Land's End to John O'Groats, but as I studied it, I decided I would do it the opposite way.
Yeah, you've got to go north
to
south. Yeah,
and which turned out to be a stroke of genius, because that's where the opposite way that everybody else was going. So I saw everybody, rather than following along like a sheep or something along the way, which that's not a bad thing to be a sheep, but of course, you know, I wanted to be my own guy and go my own way.
Right. Now, in the old days, it always used to be from north to south was always the way, but I suppose people have changed because they've broken it up into different ways.
I did some research and never figured out. They said that the sun was in your eyes more if you go north to south, and the weather wasn't desirable. The weather came from all different directions.
Oh, yeah.
The sun was in half the sky part of the day. And I mean, it never made any sense to me. So you're out there for 100 days. You're going to get hit with weather.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was funny, too, because that's one thing I did notice is, and the English, they would come up, and they would only come out when the weather was good. They'd go to Scotland, but they would just, when the weather was good, they'd be thick as flies.
Right.
And then when the weather, it was a little bit closer there.
Oh, yeah.
The weather would be desirable because they'd have it on their apps, on their phones, and they would jump out over the hills, you know, and you'd see them everywhere. And of course, there's the local dog walkers you'd run into.
Oh, yeah.
And,
inimitable that is, yeah.
One of the things that, because I had no idea what I was really going to see, and when I got into Scotland, the very first thing I started seeing was animals. Which really comforted me, you know, especially like about a mile into it. The first thing that happened was like 60-mile-an-hour winds, and I'm thinking, this is how it is all the time.
Oh, it calmed down a bit.
It's right there on the ocean where the two oceans come together and
Toward
the tip. That's a very volatile area, and I thought, but I had no idea if this is Scotland. It was very intimidating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then about a mile, it was still blowing pretty hard, and it was kind of a blustery day, but getting into some of the farms, but I got into the very first thing I saw was a... it's called Puffin Croft. When Croft is their name for farms. But it was, and there was no one there. It was one of those honor system things, but you could buy carrots and things to feed the animals, and they weren't going to slaughter the animals. It was it was a petting zoo in a way, but it was more like the animals' home.
A wild petting zoo.
You could visit the animals on their terms, you know, like a sanctuary, kind of, as close to a sanctuary as you were going to get at that point in Scotland. And so I did, and visited the pigs, had, you know, names, and there was a donkey couple.
St. Francis.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, there you go, the Pope, right?
Yeah.
In fact, I have a Pope quote, too.
We've got to have a Pope quote.
And the night is not complete without a Pope quote. Yeah. Let me see here. I'm going to pick this one out. This is an amazing thing. And I used to do these, and people would think they wouldn't like them. And I thought, this is the Pope. I mean, you know, people listen to the Pope, right? And this Pope is sounding so vegan. It's like, I would think, the next question I would ask him would be, are you vegan? So here's my Pope quote for the night. Each creature possesses its own particular goodness and perfection. Each of the various creatures, willed in its own being, reflects in its own way a ray of God's infinite wisdom and goodness. Man must therefore respect the particular goodness of every creature to avoid any disordered use of things. When has the Pope ever said something like that? Why would he be, you know... That's very encouraging to me. I would pick up on that. Yeah. I'm not Catholic, but anyway.
Well, that's why the rest of the church don't like him.
Maybe, yeah, because he's real. I mean, he's appealing to young people, and a part of it's they're trying to, you know, kind of make themselves more appealing, basically, in the more of a marketing sense. But it sounds
without
great.
Changing.
I'm hearing him. You know, he's talking about environment. His encyclical letter is all about environment, young people. I'm getting quotes right and left off of it. There's 8 of them on this page. But
hey, if Donald Trump even is going over, so he must be.
they just met a couple days ago or something. Okay. I saw the thing of it.
You embarked on this trek.
Right.
And what was your purpose? You know, what did you have in your mind at the beginning?
Well, you know, again, it was a combination of things. It was a physical challenge, you know, of being able to, after hiking, you know, 100 miles and then 300 miles, and then, wow, this is 1,100 miles, you know, and wow, you know, I'd never done more than like 20 days or so, 25 days. So another step in that challenge, but it was really animal themed. Of course, I'm vegan and have the Veg Curious meeting. So I thought this will be something I could always talk about and, you know, say that I did, and wanted to, you know, say that I did it. So it was an accomplishment of the continuous walk, which was, you know, kind of strange because you're on vacation. It's like, well, I could just take a train for 20 miles of it. It's like, no, you can't do that. And I want to mention too that my wife joined me. She was a big part of it. My wife Sue, great big part. As I look back on it now, she was overseas, but we were communicating by satellite, and she would find me bed and breakfast and things about once a week because I was camping and roughing it. But then I'd get pretty ragged and need something, and she would check it all out ahead of time. So she did that, and then she joined me in Chipping Camden, which was about 3/4 of the way down, and followed me on out to the end. We went together, and she was a great, great hiker. Jumped right in. I think she did 250 miles. So, you know, it was a great thing. And so it was animal themed. And I wanted to say that I'm doing a presentation on this at a Veg Curious meeting on December 26th. So I want to invite anyone that's interested in this.
Write it down.
Yes, please. Put it on your calendar after Christmas is over, the day after Christmas, sort of that dead week. So sort of like a bunch of people that are kind of friends and, you know, that know me or whatever. So it's a Veg Curious meeting, but I'll be doing the whole presentation.
It's the second day of Christmas.
Second day of Christmas, yeah. It's Boxing Day.
Boxing Day.
Boxing
indeed.
Day. So if you want to celebrate Boxing Day, come on out.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. So anyway, I'm doing that. And I have over 600 videos. Of course, I'm not going to bore everyone. The videos are about a minute long, but I'm going through those videos and I'm looking at like a theme of landscape, dramatic landscapes, people and animals and architecture. So those are the groups that I'm going to try to separate the films. And, you know, talk to about the trip itself. And what was kind of amazing, and just to touch on a couple things, what motivated me, because obviously I'd trained for 3 years. I knew I was going to go in 2014, so I had built up to it, had plenty of time. Physical conditioning was allowed me to be able to do it, but what was going to motivate me to get across? And when you're out there, it's so bleak. I mean, there's nothing there. You know. And now I know. Because I'm used to trees and some, you know, varied landscape. This is just desolation. And I think it was the conversations that I had with people, because you'd see other people that were experiencing the same thing. They were coming the other way. Most of them, hardly anybody going my way. Maybe one guy the whole time going my way. Everyone else. But it, like in the case of the West Highland Way, there'd be 15, 20 people a day, at least, sometimes more.
So you'd stop people along the way?
Well, yeah, because you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're doing the same thing. So it's like, hey, what are you doing? And of course, I had the bomb to, you know, hey, I'm doing the granddaddy thing. And they'd be like, oh my God. And it would just be such a cool thing because, and you would be like walking along and can't see anything and fatigue and boredom had set in. And all of a sudden, there'd be this figure coming up and, oh, here comes another one.
Right. You know, and, got a live one.
And, yeah, there's a live one, yeah. So, and then I call it catch and release. It was like, well, especially on the West Highland Way, because they were a dime a dozen. In fact, I'd pick which country I wanted to talk to. If it was American, I'd give them the high five. If they were English, I'd say, well, I'll talk to you later. And if it was Scottish, I would really start talking. It would spend a little more time maybe because there wasn't that many Scottish people on the West Highland Way, of course, because they didn't really think that was that big of a deal, I guess.
Always there.
They lived there, you know? Right. So that would be sort of special to see a Scottish person. But, I can't tell you, like, you'd be tired and things would hurt. And you'd have this uplifting conversation. It would be about animals because they would ask you what your theme is. Mm. Especially if you told them you're doing John O'Groats to Land's End, they would be, first of all, if you're 500 miles from John O'Groats, they'd be like, oh, wow, this guy's just walked 500 miles. That was a big deal.
Right.
So there was a little bit of credibility factor. And then they would say, what's your theme? You know, and I would say animals. And it would kind of go from there. Mm. And it was kind of like I take from you where people want to talk about their story. And I wanted to make sure I got their story. Because, of course, my story was sounding repetitious because I could do it 15 times a day. So I actually finally got tired of talking about my stuff. And then what I would do is throw something out there and watch them. And when they picked up on something and took off on it, I'd let them roll. Mm. And just let them roll with their story. And it was really interesting to me because they all obviously had a story. Oh, I've wanted to do this. Because they were doing a 100-mile thing, which is a big deal. You know, I mean, you know, 100 miles. They'd come from another country maybe, you know. And so I would acknowledge them for it. And then we would talk about animals. And everyone has something to say about animals. And so another thing that I think is kind of a theme that I'm running right now with VegCurious is that we're in a love affair with animals, I think, right now. It's really coming to fruition. I think that's what you see with veganism is a reflection of that. We're in love with animals, Arnold. I mean, whales, dolphins, dogs, cats, penguins, all the wild animals, except for just a few, the farmed animals. That's it. And all the vegans have done is said, hey, what about the farmed animals? Simple. I mean, I think it's a genuine concern.
Right.
So they're the ones that are asking the question. Hey, we believe they're great too, and that's what the whole trip was eye to eye level with these animals that were farmed. I mean, they weren't. I mean, they were wonderful, but they were like part of an equation, which was sad on that respect. But it was really that didn't linger on that though. But I would be enjoying that time walking through, always the same lambs and sheep mostly, with that same protective bond. Once you key into that and you see it, it's so powerful to watch it because of course they're looking at you like what's going on? Because it's like I'm not the farmer,
right?
And they don't see a lot of people, so they were really kind of curious, especially the babies, you know. So,
well, that's it. I suppose, I mean, being a vegan, you have to address animals and their use and in this world. It's the two go hand in hand, don't they?
Well, I think once you touch on farm animals, all of a sudden everybody's in a big uproar because every farmer will tell you that it's an unfortunate aspect of agriculture. They've known this since the beginning of time. There's a part of it that you got to do. And you know, that's fine. That they've done that. They don't want to be told that they're a bad person. I mean, that's not really what the vegans are trying to do. What we're trying to do is say, hey, wait a second. You know, what about the farmed animals? What about them?
Right.
You know, and that is an honest question. So I think if you're going to be in animal agriculture, you're, as we move forward, you're going to be in a position of having to explain that. You know, like as we move, you know, onwards, let's talk about that. And that's what veganism is, and it is exploding. They just did 100 most influential vegans program on a. Oh, yeah. I was telling you about the YouTube thing is kind of exploding.
Oh, right.
Well, there's a thing called plant-based news, and it's sort of like a news program, but they just made it up. You know, it's a YouTube thing, but it looks pretty professional because they got, you know, graphics now and all that. So anyway, they talked to all these influential vegans. Well, I was thinking they should do like 10 because I didn't know there was really 100. Well, they ran out of spots. There's a bunch of people that I've known that I was like, you should have him. And they don't even have that. They need 200, maybe 300. You know, that's how many people are in their own, like, not like me because I'm just a small town guy, but people that have gotten 500,000 hits on YouTube or their own little following all over the world in the vegan world. There's a guy named Earthling Ed in London, and he does Man on the Street. So I kind of keyed into him because I like Man on the Street stuff. I like to talk to people one-on-one. It's fascinating to me. But anyways, that's another aspect of it.
Let me just remind everyone, this is Arnoldo, your host of Tommy's Holiday Camp, and we're with Ray Cooper, a veg curious, and his fascinating trek down the length of Great Britain, and just talking to people about veganism and animals and the effect on animals in this world. Fascinating. You can give us a call, 755-9250, area code 707, if you've got a question.
Another thing I'd like to mention is on the 13th, it's almost sold out, but we're doing a festive holiday dinner. Mm-hmm. And we're at the Seventh-day Adventist Church on Petaluma Boulevard North. It's 2695 Petaluma Boulevard North at Gossage Avenue. There's all kinds of parking. And we have a great kitchen facility. And we've been there, I think, 3 months now. It's a great thing for us. That we really love it there. And so we decided we'd throw in this holiday dinner because we've never done a whole dinner in the 3 years we've done Veg Curious.
Okay.
And it was funny, the song you played about the packaged good and the chemist list.
Right.
You know, I'm so keyed into that now. And this is a wonderful thing that we're doing with Katie May. She's going to be the chef for this dinner. And she teaches at True North with Dr. Goldhammer and Dr. McDougall both. She works at both facilities. Plus, she has her own culinary gym, she calls it. It's in Santa Rosa. It's really nicely laid out. You go in and learn hands-on how to cook.
Oh, wow.
And it's designed because one of the things about veganism is to be successful, you really want to learn how to cook at home. That's the key to it all. Because when you go out in the world, there's all these temptations, and not just animal stuff, but the fats and the processed foods and the sugars. And what you have to realize is the competition out there when you're feeding the public and you have a restaurant, you got to hit them with the most decadent stuff. I mean, this is maybe not a good thing to be doing. You know, I mean, fats and sugars, that's the one that really lures people in, and it's cheap.
Yeah.
Guys that make way more money than me, all they do is go there and try to figure out how, let's put this chemical in there, let's put MSG, sugar's cheap. You know, they put sugar in everything.
Right.
You know, if you look at other countries, they're behind us, and you see what they're doing there, it's all sugar, it's refined sugar. I mean, because it's real cheap. Even like mangoes are a good example. You go, and Costco doesn't do this anymore, but when you used to buy dried mangoes at Costco, they were dipped in a sugar brine.
Oh, wow.
Again, sugar's like 12 cents a pound, and the mangoes are $12 a pound. So that's what they're doing, is they're kind of thinning out the quality by putting it in.
It
goes over great. People love it.
It
just makes it taste more mango-y. It's more sweet. But you don't need that. Mangoes are pure sugar anyway.
Right.
You know. So you got to really watch for that. But that's the whole thing behind this holiday dinner. It's completely whole foods. No oils. Or no refined oils, no added sugars or salt. So it's not processed. So I'm really warming up to it. I was skeptical at first because I thought, Katie, this is the holidays. You need to toss us something here.
People demand.
I want a pie. I want some chocolate stuff and French fries or something. But so I talked to her and I said, Do you like ever eat French fries or maybe a peanut butter cup or something? Like, because I can't not do that. I mean, at some point, she goes, well, look, Ray, if I was around Dr. Goldhammer, I would tell you a different thing. But I go out on weekends and I'll have some French fries with, you know, and I try to keep it under wraps. But yeah, I live my life. I'm a real person. Right. I said, great. Now we're kind of coming together a little bit here. I think this is going to be a wonderful dinner. It's on the 13th of December, coming up next Wednesday.
Yeah, just very soon. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be a great thing.
Good. And how do they find out, get tickets or find out about it?
It's a meetup group. You know, it's Katie May's Culinary Gym, Plant Street Culinary Gym. It's on her meetup group. You can RSVP, and it's $20, which is a great deal for a four-course holiday meal, complete with dessert. And she's going to do a lecture. That's another one, a really good one, too, because people pay a lot of money to go to True North and Dr. McDougall. It's not cheap to go to those places, and she's very generous with her time. So we're really happy to be collaborating with her at Veg Curious. She may do another one down the road. Anyway, that's going on. And a little bit more about the trip. One of the things about the trip to make it more of a challenge is that I avoided roads the whole way. It's a lot of guys do this. They're on bicycles or they're, you know, walking on roads or something. No roads. In some cases, I had to walk a day out of my way to avoid 4 miles of road.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I do not like roads at all. That's no compass, too. It's a navigational challenge. That's part of the things that make it fun and interesting. Navigating the featureless landscapes of Scotland and the hedgerows mazes of England with no compass and avoiding roads. So it's really across country.
That's quite challenging, I must say.
That's why I'm saying it could be up to 1,200 miles. No one knows. There was no way to really do it. The official length is 836 miles, but I know it was over 1,000 just by my daily calculating, by how many days, and I knew how many miles I was doing. I started off maybe 10 miles a day because I wanted to make sure I didn't get injured. And like I was telling you, the wonderful soft ground of Scotland that's another genius, because starting in England, you'd have ruined yourself on the roads and never made it to Scotland. And another thing is that I wanted to make sure I did Scotland. Nothing against England, but if I was going to not make it, I was going to at least see a bunch of Scotland. And so when I got into England, I almost felt like turning around and going back to Scotland.
It's beautiful.
If I was to go back, which I thought that I've done Britain now, I probably won't go back. But now I've kind of starting to long for Britain again. For a lot of reasons, the people too. But Wales.
Oh, yeah.
To walk around Wales. Because Wales, a little fun fact, and I believe I'm correct on this, Wales is the only country that has a trail all the way around the outside border.
Oh, really?
I believe that's true. With Offa's Dyke, and they have a coastal trail going around. And it's a wonderful country, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever going there, it's all strange. You go to a small town, you go to a little cafe, and you sit down, and you can't understand anything what anybody's saying because they're speaking in another language. It was just the strangest experience when you go to Wales. I love it.
Cornwall too.
They're bringing back Cornish. I understand the language.
They like to think of themselves as their own separate thing. You know, I think that's I kind of hung around long enough there to get a little bit of that story from them. So they, sort of independent there at Cornwall.
So was there any bad things that happened, or strange things that occurred?
Not really, and that's a great question. That could almost mean that it would be like boring, but
it was just too good.
It was strange every day. I don't know. I mean, nothing really bad, thank God, happened. You know, I mean, I'll tell you something that happened. I was in Scotland, and I was listening to my iPod, which I was want to do every day, and I saw a bridge, and I thought, I'm too lazy to walk down to the bridge because the water was like 6 inches deep, so I just walked across this river. Well, somehow I slammed face first. I just went straight down, and whatever was there, I was going to hit with my face because I had no time. I don't know how it happened. It happened so quickly.
Slippery rock or something.
Yeah, it was this freak thing, and so my whole front of my body just slammed, and it happened to be 3 inches of water that broke my fall.
Wow.
But I lost my iPod, and I was, oh, my God. It was like, I don't know if I can make it now.
Yeah.
You know, so my phone got cracked. It was pretty devastating, but the iPod must have got water in it, and so when I got what I did is I walked for a couple days with no tunes and thought, this is, I think I could probably do this. And then I got to a place called Garve, which I thought they had a store, but there was no store. There was actually a food truck, no post office, just a food, and a train station though, but no food of vegan variety. They had one thing. It was a coconut, like, cake of some kind. It wasn't a cake. There was no cake involved. It was just a lump of sugar that was pink, and it was more rich than like the frosting on top of the frosting of a wedding cake.
Oh yeah,
that's what it was. And I thought, okay, here we go. Well, this is not going to get me another 6 days. I had to resupply for 6 days at that point. So I got on the train and went. I think Inverness was about 40 miles. And got to Inverness, and in about 3 hours, I completely resupplied and got an iPod from this, like an Apple store. And this guy set me up with an account, and we got tunes.
Oh, wow.
I walked out of there with an iPod with about 300 songs on it.
Oh, great.
And it was like totally rejuvenated me. But, I mean, that's probably the closest thing to anything really bad happening, which, you know, because I was pretty cautious, you know. And another thing is, like, I was really careful. Like, it wasn't this, like, oh, wake up at 5 a.m. and got to get out of here.
Oh, yeah.
None of that. It was all about conversations that was like, geez, it's like 5 o'clock and I've only gone 4 miles, you know. And so every night I would go, like, till 10 o'clock because, well, I'm just so far behind schedule because I didn't care about time. And I would just talk to people all day, you know. And somehow because of that 5 to 9 shift, I was able to get about 15 miles a day. And that, otherwise, I would have never made it.
Right.
So it was that last push at the end of the day, which I was very determined to do. And what was really amazing, that I never ran out of energy. I could have gone till midnight every night. I have to say, I could say it's totally the vegan thing, and I believe that's true. It's physical conditioning, but there was never a time when I was, like, exhausted.
Mm.
Never. Because I slept for 9 hours a night, and I mean, like, comatose sleep.
Wow.
It was like this rejuvenative.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and then wake up and just, well, it's another day, and just keep walking, and I would never push myself, you know, because I kind of learned from doing a lot of long distance hikes. It was just about, you know, pacing and, you know, don't dictate this schedule onto your body,
right.
You know, and like I could tread real slowly if it was a certain terrain, you know, those type of things.
Well, now, obviously, you were inspired. You weren't always a vegan.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the inspiration really gripped you to become one and to do this. What was the inspiration?
There was the backyard chickens and kind of blurring the line between the farm animals and what became pets, you know, in your backyard. So that's where the real the sky opened up for me when I became vegetarian. But it did take 3.5 years to really look into veganism, and that's kind of why Veg Curious got created, was because I didn't know anybody, and I thought veganism was way too extreme, and it really isn't. I mean, that's what I would say. People would think, oh, you're trying to talk me into being vegan, which I don't care. I really don't. I'm saying it's the truth, especially now. If you're vegan right now, there are companies clamoring to cater to you.
Mm.
You are the buying future. In fact, there's a lot of huge corporations that are buying vegan products. They're moving. Because it can't beat them, join them. I mean, there's a lot of people in the dairy industry that are fighting it.
Mm.
You know, they're trying to sue people for calling their almond milk, which is ridiculous.
Right.
Sore losers. And again, I don't want anybody to lose out on business. I'm saying if you care about your kids, you better start looking into vegan products. And this is the conversations that I was having with farmers. I had four farmers lined up on four corners of property one time. Started off with one farmer, and they all walked up to me, and it was like, you got to realize in England, the farmers would normally kind of ignore you because you're just another guy that's probably going to bug them for directions or something.
Okay.
And they have to give you right-of-ways. They're forced to give you right-of-ways.
Right.
And you sense that there's a little bit of resentment. They're certainly not coming out, hey, you want a cookie? Or, you know, they're not doing that. They're just doing their job. And I think they're not doing very well. Mm-hmm. If you really go behind the farms, and that was another wonderful aspect of this trip, is that you got to see agriculture from behind.
Right.
Equipment, you know, rusting.
Everyday stuff.
Not maintained. Like, this is not a happy scenario. Not a place that I'd want my food being created. Things that you wouldn't want to see.
Right.
And so these guys aren't making money, and I don't think they get vacations like everyone else, you know, because they're married to this.
Tied to it,
and they're not making money.
Wow.
They used to be able to subsist on a pretty good, you know, hey, look, I got good food. I could make a decent living. And I it's a hard work.
Right.
But now they work hard and they don't have a future. They're tenant farmers in a lot of cases. So I would talk to these guys. And this is a really important point, Arnold. They would listen to you now, where they probably would just, you know, kind of laugh at you in the last 5 years. Now they would be saying, well, okay, I'll tell you what, Mr. Vegan, do you have a solution for what to do with the land? And I would really say, that's an honestly great question, because you've got land, you know, maybe suitable for cities. You've got land that's good for crops, which is less than the land that's marginal, that's good for nothing. And if you're faced with, hey, we own this land or we're going to occupy this land, we have to make this land pay. How are you going to do that? And that's a challenge. Right. That is a legitimate concern.
They haven't got to there yet.
Well, they can turn marginal land into food and subsistence. And that's exactly why they did that. So do I have an answer for that? No, not really. Except for the fact that I was there and I didn't want any animal stuff and I was paying money. So ecotourism, especially in Scotland, is a viable way. You know, it's unspoiled. People will go there. In fact, they're not making money on the sheep anyway, because the New Zealand market
is cheaper, isn't it? Yeah.
It came in 20 years ago and it never left. The red light is on.
Yeah, let me just grab that to carry on a bit.
Is that a phone call?
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, the hell's radio.
So we got a phone call here, and is it?
Yeah, this is he.
We'll have to see if it's Veg Curious related.
Oh, great. Hold on a second and give me a few minutes. We'll pot it up, okay? Hold on a second. Thanks for calling. Okay, thanks. Hold on.
So we have the phone lines are open to people could call in too, right?
Yeah. Although this is, my next guest actually.
Okay.
Dr. Matteo Garbi Lotto.
The sudden oak death. You know, that's kind of strange too. It's like I didn't think of oaks doing anything suddenly. They're pretty slow as we go along.
That's a good point, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, oak lives, it's literally sudden. In a matter of a year or two, it's very quick.
That's quick, yeah.
And, Ray, what an amazing trip you did all the way at the length and breadth of Great Britain, putting forward veganism and how to treat animals. And, wow, it's all tied up in the same thing, really, with whether it's sudden oak death or veganism. I think they're all tied together.
I think so. You know, I think it's a thing of moving from where we are to a place of less harm. Hmm. That's one way I would describe veganism, where it ties in with environmentalism, it ties in with even all living things. I mean, you wouldn't kill a tree just for no reason. I mean, people love trees too. I mean, you know, plants. I mean, I do. I mean, they're, again, like you look at Scotland, where they had taken all the trees away, and what you have left over is very bleak.
Very much so.
So they do add a lot of personality and kind of comfort from the weather. Trees are great for that. So, and one of the things that being on this trip, the people totally got the animal aspect of it.
Okay.
You know, and that was very encouraging. In fact, one of the things I noticed that was surprising was that almost anyone under 35 had seen Cowspiracy. That was my go-to movie. Yeah. If I just had a minute with somebody, it would be like, hey, if you go check out Cowspiracy, and you guys get Netflix, and they all get Netflix over there. So it made it onto Netflix, and then the companion movie was What the Health. So then they would watch, they'd seen both, and so many of that group, like I said, like 70 to 80% of people under 35 had seen Cowspiracy, and about half of that group was transitioning.
Okay.
Like they were either already vegan or they were totally into it, thought it was great. And then even the farmers that I was talking to were really very respectful, and they would say, a couple of them were vegetarian, believe it or not. And a lot of them said, my daughter's vegetarian or I know a vegetarian,
right.
You know, and that was, they were kind of reaching out to you.
Well, that's amazing, Ray. Getting it out there. It's so vital, and I really appreciate you coming in
to
the studio. And again, how do they contact you and about the dinner coming up? And
Well, There's a Veg Curious meetup. If you get on Meetup, you can do you can get on Veg Curious and be part of our Meetup group, which is once a month on the last Tuesday of every month in Petaluma. So it's for Petaluma people that are close to Petaluma that want to have a group that's provide encouragement and inspiration and information for vegan diet. And it's at 2695 Petaluma Boulevard North at Gossage. That's the Seventh Day Adventist Church. That's where we meet the last Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock. We have the thing coming up on the 26th of December, and also at the dinner on the 13th. They could contact me at my email at raycooper2260@gmail.com. And thank you for having me, Arnold.
Oh, my pleasure, Ray. Thank you so much for coming in. We'll keep in contact, keep people ahead of things.
Yeah, good luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you so much. And yes, indeed, let's have a bit of fast food, Richard Thompson.
Small Mac, Big Mac, burger and fries, shoving in boxes all same size. Easy on the mustard, heavy on the sauce, double for the fat boy, eats like a whore.